जय राधा माधव कंजरी हरि जय राधा माधव कंजरी हरि All glories to the assembled devotees. गौष्टि श्रीगुरु श्रीगुरुंग ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 8, text 30. This chapter is entitled Lord Krishna shows his universal form. So this is a very long sloka here. We're going to try to find a proper meter. Otherwise, we got Pushkar here who's going to enlighten us how to do it. All right, let's try. Hastagrahe charati vidhim pita kalu kaladhai chidram. Let me see if we got it first. Chidram hyanta nihita vayuna shikya bhanda shutavid. Dantagare dirtamani jana sangam arta pradipam kale gopyo yarhi griha krite shusu vyagrachita. Can we follow that one? Okay. Can you follow, can you repeat, or can you not repeat?
But won't be good either. Stagrahe rachayati vedi pita kalu kaladyaish Chidram yanta nihita vayuna shikya bandhe shutadve dantagare jitamaniganam fangamata padipam kali gopyo yahi grihakritye shu suvyagrachitta.
Wait, can you follow me? Yeah. All right, let me read. Hasta agrahye. When the destination is out of the reach of his hands.
When the destination is out of the reach of his hands.
Rachayati. He arranges to make.
With him.
It means.
Pitaka.
By wooden planks piled together. Lukala adhyai. By overturning the stone mortar for grinding spices. Chidram, a hole. He, indeed. Antanihita, about the contents of the pot. Vayuna, with such knowledge. Shikya, hanging by a swing. Pandeshu, in the pots. Tadvit, expert in that knowledge or in full knowledge. Danta Agare, in a very dark room. Drittamaniganam, because of being decorated with valuable jewels. Sangam, his own body. Artha Pravipam, in the light required for seeing in darkness. Kale, after that, in due course of time. Gopya, the elderly gopis. Yarhi, as soon as. Grihakriteshu, in discharging household affairs. Savyagra chitta, are busily engaged. Translation in Portuguese by Srila Prabhupada. When the milk and curd are kept high on a swing hanging from the ceiling, and Krishna Balaram cannot reach it, they arrange to reach it by piling up various planks and turning upside down the mortar for grinding spices. Being quite aware of the contents of the pot, they pick holes in it. While the elderly gopis go about their household affairs, Krishna and Balaram sometimes go into a dark room, brightening the place with valuable jewels and ornaments on their bodies, and taking advantage of this light by stealing. Please repeat, when the milk and curd are kept high on a swing, hanging from the ceiling, and Krishna and Balaram cannot reach it. They arrange to reach it by piling up various planks and turning upside down the water for grinding spices. Being quite aware of the contents of a pot, they pick holes in it, while the elderly gopis go about their household affairs. Krishna and Balaram sometimes go into a dark room, brightening the place with the valuable jewels and ornaments on their bodies, and taking advantage of this light by stealing. Purport. Formerly in every household, yogurt and butter were kept for use in emergencies. But Krishna and Balaram would pile up planks so that they could reach the pots, and would then pick holes in the pots with their hands so that the contents would leak out and they could drink it. This was another means for stealing butter and milk. When the butter and milk were kept in a dark room, Krishna and Balaram would go there and make the place bright with the valuable jewels on their bodies. On the whole, Krishna and Balaram engage in stealing butter and milk from the neighborhood houses in many ways. Om Agyanat Mirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Shaksuru Militanjina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Pancha Kalpatirvishcha Kripa Sindhu Vyayeva Chapatitanam Pavanavyo Vaishnavyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vatsari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. So this is a continuation of narration of Krishna's Leelas in his childhood. What is very striking here is that Krishna is being described as a thief, Krishna and Balaram. They're being described as thieves. And by doing so, the notion of ownership arises. If somebody's stealing something, it's because it is understood that there's ownership of something that belongs to someone else. Now, this sense of ownership, we all have it. It's not something foreign to us. Just like, right now we own certain things. Even if a devotee may claim that he is a very renounced person, still he owns his dhoti or his kurta, or he owns his socks. So that sense of ownership is always there. Even in the most renounced person, and even if you manage to be a Naga Bhava in India, you still have a sense of ownership of your body, even though there is nothing covering your body. But you think, oh, I own this body. So that sense of ownership is very deeply rooted in all of us, in all living beings, even animals. Animals are known for being territorial in many ways. So where does that sense of ownership come from? Like this temple, for example, ISKCON owns this temple. We own the vehicles we drive around, and this ownership is all over the place. In fact, Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita, he claims ownership over the entire creation. There's that several slokas in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna confirms and asserts his ownership upon everything. Uktaragyagyatpasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Krishna claims ownership over every single planet, not only in the material world, but also in the spiritual world. So Krishna says that everything that's present in the material world, manifested in the material world, he owns it. And everything that is present in the spiritual world, he owns it. So how could it be that he is a thief? I mean, he owns everything. So Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, just like, for example, we have a hard time, people have a hard time understanding that God owns everything. Because, first of all, they don't see God, number one. They don't see a deed, you know, a title deed, though this belongs to God. Just like if you own a tract of land, and the land may not be valuable as much, but if you find some minerals in the land, you automatically you own that. Because you have a title deed that the state says that you own this piece of land, and you find oil or find gold or whatever, some kind of mineral, you automatically own that. So when Krishna says, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, he's saying, I own each and every planet. So automatically, when he says that, he owns everything in it. Think about it. I mean, that sense of ownership is... And like everything else in this world, Krishna is the source of everything. So ownership, we have that sense of ownership ourselves because it exists also in Krishna. So how could it be that he is being described here in the Bhagavatam that he's a thief? Actually, if you want to take further this notion of ownership, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita also, he says that he owns us. Not only Krishna owns, actually it's also in the philosophy of the Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita is also an Upanishad, but in the philosophy of Sri Upanishad, Ishavasyamidarsarvam yatkimsa jagatan jagat. Everything that is animate or inanimate, that means souls and dull matter, that which moves and that which doesn't move, Krishna owns it. Ishavasyamidarsarvam yatkimsa jagatan jagat. So Krishna is not only claiming ownership upon inanimate things, but he's claiming ownership upon the souls, upon the living entities. In the Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna makes a declaration along the same lines, when he says, Yakshyato na punar moham evam yasyasi pangava yena bhutaniya sheshani drakshatsi atmaniya tomayi. Krishna claims that Krishna is telling Arjun, when you are free from illusion, you will actually see that all human beings are in me, I am in them, and that they are all mine. So, again, why would Krishna say that? Well, he's the owner of everything and everyone. Now, we have this idea of owning another person to be a nefarious, evil idea, like slavery, right? Like in this country, America, I think, was one of the last countries on earth to have a practice slavery. And owning somebody else's body is considered now a very uncivilized, brutal type of ownership. How can you own anybody? There was a couple of years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, there was a guy on eBay who actually put himself for a bid. I don't know if you know what eBay is about here, but eBay is a forum on the internet where people sell stuff. They auction things away. So this guy, he said, you know, I want to auction myself away. And actually, people were bidding.
it was like $1 million. It went up to over $1 million, and then the Supreme Court had to step in and say, no, you can't do that, because slavery is not practiced in this country anymore. So we have this idea that you cannot own a body, you cannot someone else, you cannot own someone else. Still, in this material world, people still think that they own the bodies of other living beings, maybe not human beings. I mean, or even look at it in China right now, actually. The state decides that they own the right to procreation. Just like in China, there's a policy that you cannot have more than one kid, because there are so many of them. They say, no, you cannot have more than one kid. And if you do, they find ways of abortion or whatever. They do the needful to get rid of extra population. So they think they own these bodies. So the sense of ownership, when it is purified, when it is purified, we actually, like Krishna says, when you purify yourself, when you're free from illusion, then you realize that everything is mine, and everyone is mine. So we cannot claim ownership upon anything nor upon anyone. We don't own our families, we do not own the wives, we do not own our children, we do not own slaves, we do not own anything. Krishna also claims ownership upon the senses. When he describes in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhumira Pona Lobayu Kan Manubudhira Evacha. Krishna claims ownership upon five gross elements. He claims ownership upon the mind. He claims ownership upon intelligence. All these different energies, Krishna says, they are mine. So when you're walking around and thinking that you're independent, that is perfect illusion. So, I got my own mind. I made up my mind. So we say, I made up my mind about things. But who really made up the mind for you? Krishna claims ownership upon everything. So how is it that the Bhagavatam right now is describing them as thieves? How is it that Krishna is going around poking holes, in this, in the yogurt, this bags, this thing hanging from, how can we say that he's a thief if he owns everything? Not only Krishna owns everything and everyone, but Krishna also owns the feelings. These feelings of affection that being described in these verses, why is it so appealing to us, to the Vaishnavas, that these activities of the Krishna are, Krishna Balaram are so appealing and so transcendentally blissful? That's also given by Krishna. The fact that people look at the pastimes of Krishna, they will look at the pastimes of Krishna based upon their conditioning. Some people think that Krishna is a mythological personality, and they are aware of Krishna, and they say, okay, it's a myth. It's a mythic story from India, ancient India. Then you have people who look at Krishna's pastimes as worthy of imitation. Oh, Krishna is hanging around so many beautiful girls. I can do the same. That's sahajya. The sahajya see Krishna's pastimes in a different light. And then you have the impersonalist, the Mayavadi, who said, no, that cannot be. God cannot have that. It's impossible that the absolute truth can have this kind of relationships, because it's so mundane. I mean, what mundane can you get if you hang around beautiful girls in this material world? That's quite mundane. If you are in the person in the path of self-realization, if you're a person interested in leaving this material world, hanging around women is the last thing you want to do. But yet, Krishna is exactly doing that. So the impersonalists, when they look at Krishna's passion, they say, oh, okay, yeah, he's hanging around women, so therefore it cannot be. This is not the absolute. And the Buddhists, when they look at Krishna's pastime, they say, no, it's impossible, so let's kill ourselves. This can't be. The absolute truth can't be this. But when the Vaishnavas look at Krishna's pastimes, because they have been cleansed of all this contamination of Sahajiyas, Mayavada, impersonalism, Buddhism, karmic, all the things are completely washed away. They can see that it's actually these activities are originally performed by Krishna. Oftentimes we are told, and even Prabhupada uses this expression in the narration of the Krishna book, oftentimes we are told that Krishna actually imitates us. That Krishna comes down, when he comes down to this world, he imitates human beings. But actually it's the other way around. We imitate him. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that when a Kanishtha Adhikari devotee is aware of Krishna's pastimes, and even the Madhumadhikara devotees, they think that we have that tendency to think that, oh, Krishna is doing just like us, we are doing. But the Uttamadhikari Vaishnavas, they realize actually that's the other way around, that we are imitating Krishna's lilas. Otherwise, how can you explain? Otherwise, it's impossible to explain what we do. Why are we pursuing relationships? Why are we pursuing all these dealings with living beings, with wives, with husbands, with family, with friends? Why do we pursue living in a certain country? Why do we pursue belonging to a certain organization like ISKCON? Why we do this? Because this is the natural tendency of the soul is to be in different lilas, in different rasas, mellows, like Srila Rupa Goswami says. But Krishna is known as Rasaraj. Krishna is not only the source of all these rasas, but Krishna is the supreme enjoyer of all these rasas. So the fact that some of us are able to perceive Krishna as a person who is engaging in different dealings, in different activities, and in different pastimes, that's also granted by Krishna and the spiritual master. I mean, who on earth would think that God is doing their things? It's impossible in the material world because we are so deeply rooted to the illusory existence. And think about it, this existence, this in psychology, there is what is called a reinforced behavior, just like a young in prison, right? If you behave nicely, the guard will start giving you some extra donut for lunch, for breakfast. And so you realize that if you behave nicely, you get an extra donut. And that's happening all over the world. We do it with our own kids. When we are raising our kids, we know that they like certain foods or they have preference or pray the likes of a certain object or a toy or whatever, and we reward that kid the good behavior by giving the good thing. This is the love of the world. Even the idea of karma is the same thing. If you behave nicely, you can go to the heavenly planets. If you play by the rules, you know, you can go even higher than the heavenly planets. You can go to Brahman. So this idea that we are pursuing bliss, and that's why we get together, that's why we form societies, that's why we get married, that's why we have brothers, sisters, relationships, family members, just like as we go along reading this passage of Krishna, you will start seeing that Krishna is also having relationships with the real old gopis. You know, to have a grandmotherly affection, grandfatherly affection. So these rasas, Krishna, not only he's the source of these rasas, but he's the enjoyer of these rasas. And we are participants. In the Brahmasan he died, he said, Yad Pava Bhavito Manajustata Iva Samprapya Rupa Mahimasana Jana Bhusha. It is said that the devotees who have developed bhavas, emotions, towards the Supreme Lord, they are granted certain conveyances, certain ornaments, they are assigned certain degrees of beauty. Everything is given to this devotee so they can engage in the pastimes of Krishna. But it's all based on love, based on how much we want these bhavas to develop in our own hearts. All of these devotees who are participating in this Krishna's Leelas right now that we are reading, these devotees have been accommodated by Yogamaya into those moods so that they can enhance. There is a way in which, by having this arrangement by Yogamaya, under the direction of Krishna, Krishna enjoys even further. The enjoyment of Krishna heightens at every moment. That's what the meaning of Krishna is that Krishna's enjoyment is never limited, is constantly higher and higher. It's a heightened at every step. And that's why Krishna, in the various lyrics, explained that that's why Krishna expanded himself into so many living beings. Because Krishna wanted to enjoy. And there is only enjoyment when there are two people. When you can exchange love, you can exchange love only between two people. Being a lonely yogi somewhere in a lonely planet, that won't do it. So Krishna expands. Krishna expands into jiva tattvas and vishnu tattvas. And he exchanges, just like Krishna and Balaram. I mean, think about it, Balaram here, what's Balaram doing? He's playing along Krishna's. He's playing along. Whatever Krishna is engaging, Krishna, the Balaram is there. It is said in the Krishna book, Prabhupada writes, that Balaram is always a protective. He's got a protected kind of vatsalya ras with Krishna. He wants to protect Krishna because he's the elder brother. But yet, Krishna and Balaram are non-different. They are two personalities, eternally separate, but they're non-different. So how can we understand these things? It's just to heighten Krishna's pleasure. That's what this Krishna is. I mean, Krishna is so Krishna that all these leelas, if we read them, if we understand them in the proper perspective, we can have a glimpse, a tiny glimpse of what Krishna is doing. Otherwise, a mundane person come and read this verse is just two kids playing pranks. That's all it is. But when a devotee understands, when a devotee reads these things, when a devotee immerses himself or herself into the bhava of these Vaishnavas, or these Vaikunthavasis, or these Vrajavasis, they can perceive that. And this is called mysticism. This you cannot get simply by reading. The understanding of Krishna, the understanding of Krishna as he is, as the Rasaraj, as the person who is enjoying, can only come by love of Krishna. That's explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhaktyamam avijnanati. Krishna says, I can only be known through bhakti. Javan jascha smita totaha. And one who knows me like that, tatomam tatatanyatva vishyate tadanantaram. One who knows me like that, through bhakti, that person can enter into my abode. And for what? So, to participate in these pastimes. It is said that this Bhagavatam that we have, this edition of the Bhagavatam, is for us on earth, for earthlings, for mortal human beings. There's Bhagavatams that the demigods read in the heavenly planets is much larger. So imagine, and this is a tiny little insignificant universe, imagine the Bhagavatam, imagine the stories that all the devotees are being told in other universes that are huge, bigger than this one. Or imagine the activities actually happening in Vaikuntha. I mean, you can't. Krishna's got plentiful of energies, plenty of resources to keep engaging in transcendental rasas. So how can Krishna be a thief? He owns everything. He owns everyone. He owns all the rasas. He's the source of all the rasas. He accommodates everything. He gives us everything. So how can we say he's a thief? He's not a thief. He's just playing like a thief. And he enjoys that. And the devotees who are part of this lila, they are also arranged by Yoga Maya to think that they own this butter, to think that they own this yogurt, to think that they own these houses. And so they own that, you know, I don't want to use the word programmed, but they are so much in love, that they're so engrossed in this thing, in these activities. And they just play along. Just like even in this material world, when we go out of this class, when we walk away and we go to our jobs or houses or whatever, we think, oh, I own this TV, oh, I own this car, oh, I own this, I own that. But in reality, we don't own it, but we still operate in that mood. So similarly, when Yoga Maya is taking over, the devotees are always thinking like that, oh, I own this, I own that. Or Krishna is coming, stealing my butter. But actually, it's not. So it's a beautiful arrangement, actually. That's the beauty of it. And Krishna enjoys it. Oh, he says, Krishna thinks, oh, he's thinking, I'm the steal. Let me go steal. It's like sometimes as parents, we play with our kids. Right? You hide the favorite toy in your son or daughter or whatever, and she's still looking for it. So you play the role of a thief. You know, but you're enjoying, you as a father or mother are enjoying that your kid is looking for this thing. Oh, where's my money? Like one day I give allowances to my son, and so one day to teach him a lesson not to leave the money in any place, I grab all the dollars and put them away. And so he was looking for the Lakshmi. Oh, where's my money? Where's my money? I told him not to put it anywhere because you're going to lose it. But I was enjoying how he was looking for the money. So Krishna has the same thing. He owns everything. He arranges everything. And he gets this devotee thinking they own this butter and this yogurt and this house. And then Krishna just goes there and does whatever he wants to do. And he enjoys that. So those feelings have the proper expression in the Lord himself. And they trickle down in the material world. Because we are souls, after all. We are not dark matter. We are not inanimate objects. We have feelings. We have emotions. We have a personality. We have a sense of identity. And so all the things are coming from the Lord because Krishna has them. So, in the end, that's what is happening. Any questions? Comment? Yes. Actually, we want more questions, but okay, what's the comment? It's okay, let's take your comment, but after this, we want questions.
I just wanted to propel this lecture forward just a little bit to add to what you had talked about.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking earlier about how when we practice Krishna consciousness through devotion, we come to know Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Just like when you receive a Bhagavad Gita, you learn where an ISKCON center is and then where to go to the temple, which is the spiritual world manifested through Krishna consciousness in the material world.
Mm-hmm.
So just simply by practicing bhakti yoga, making friends with devotees, learning Bhagavad Gita from somebody that is authorized to teach you,
right,
you can come to know Krishna through bhakti, just as you expressed in the lecture. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tarika Prabhu.
Very nice. if we look at it that Krishna is like a leader, setting the example. He says, whatever great man does, come and follow. So let us say we look upon him as a leader, but the idea that, you know, he's doing these things like stealing, and
right,
you know, then for some people they definitely would get a wrong impression.
Yeah.
You know? And so how can you explain to them, well, you know, it's not like that.
Yes, very important question, because that's exactly what the Sahajiyas do. The Sahajiya is thinking, well, here it is. Krishna is declaring himself to be the supreme leader. And he's doing this, so I can do it. The same thing happened in the Leela of Ramachandra, Lord Ramachandra. He was very concerned with his citizens. When there were doubts in Mother Sita status as a wife of a king, I mean, Lord Ram was a king, when he perceived that some of the citizens thought that, you know, there's something fishy going on there, so Lord Ramachandra said, okay, I give up my wife. Because he set an example. So, it is important to understand, Krishna also declares in the Bhagavad Gita that if we wouldn't act, if we wouldn't get involved in human society, people would follow his path. And in fact, he said, everybody follow my path. So how can we reconcile this with the fact, like you were saying? You were saying that, okay, Krishna's stealing, so we can steal. In fact, in the early days of the movement, people thought they could steal on behalf of ISKCON. But that's not the case. Because the passions of Krishna are supposed to be understood in disciplic succession. Someone who bypasses the disciplic succession and jumps over straight with a contaminated mind, with a contaminated senses, contaminated existence, sinful existence, will definitely not understand Krishna. Even if a person who actually takes the process of Krishna consciousness wholeheartedly, he takes a great deal of endeavor to come to understand Krishna. So this is why it is important that we stick to the principle that Srila Prabhupada gave us. I mean, so many people say, well, you know, there are so many other Vaishnavas in the world, in India, in Bengal, whatever, you can find so many other Vaishnavas, that's great. We don't say that only Prabhupada is a Vaishnava. But what we say is that we follow the line of disciplic succession through the movement of ISKCON, through Srila Prabhupada, through the devotees in ISKCON, because that's what we are. I mean, many of us are hanging around this movement since we were teenagers. So how can you think that, you know, you can just drop it off and throw the towel away and say, you know, you can start fresh with somebody. You know, it's like, I mean, after all, we recognize that there is freedom of religion in this country, in pretty much anywhere in the world. You can change your mind. But in order for us to be on the safe side of things, in order for us not to misunderstand Krishna, because it's very easy to misunderstand Krishna. It's very easily. Maya, in reality, that's the whole purpose of Maya, is to make us misunderstand Krishna. Because the moment we misunderstand him, that's the moment we're fallen. So your question of if Krishna is stealing, can we also steal? And the question, yeah, we can steal. There is free will. You can steal, but you'll get caught. In the transcendental world, when Krishna steals, he doesn't get caught. And if he gets caught, everybody loves him. You know what I mean? So, and there are different degrees of understanding Krishna. These pastors that we are reading in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, these are really for Paramahamsas. This knowledge of Krishna is really meant only for Paramahamsas. This knowledge is not meant for the Kanishtha Adhikari. It cannot be. So if among us there are some Kanishtha Adhikaris, we better move up the ladder. That's the whole idea. The whole idea is to love Krishna in such a way that we don't want anything from Krishna. Even though Krishna is giving you everything. But in reality, our motive is really what counts as motives. What's our motivation? Am I interested in something that's other than Krishna? Am I interested in fame, adoration, distinction, women, money? Like Lord Chaitanya said, everybody's going mad after money, women, and fame. I mean, look around. Millions of years, millions of lifetimes, chewing the chewed, the same thing. There are loops, you know, when you're in the loop, you can't get out of that loop. Have you seen those little hamsters that they always go running on the same spot? They think they're going somewhere, but they're actually in the same spot. Somebody who's got higher intelligence, they can tell that the hamster is just deluding himself. So this loops in the material world, everybody's chasing after women, chasing after money, chasing after fame. And it's the loop on and on and on and on. So breaking that rule, breaking that pattern of conditioned behavior is impossible. Who can? Nobody can. That's why you need the intervention of someone liberated, a devotee of Krishna. Only a devotee of Krishna can deliver Krishna. Even just to break away from the pattern, this loops, of materialistic loops, you need somebody, you need some help. Even just to bring you to the impersonal side of things. Even if you just to make you understand that this thing is an illusion and you are going to be in Brahman, you still need somebody to help you. So let alone to make the cross from this impersonal understanding of the Absolute to the personal understanding of the Absolute. Just to understand that God is a person, it's a great deal. Let alone go through all these pastimes. Yes, Prabhu. Prabhupada.
See, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, while he was in Jagannath Puri, he used to relish few selected poets' poems, especially narrated by Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Rai. Billamangal Thakur. And there is a famous verse. Bhaje prasiddham navanita choram chaganna purusam namami. That I bow down to the gang leader of the thief. Who, what did he do? And Mahaprabhu used to really relish this thief personality. Not thief, he is the leader of the all thief ever existed. And what did he do? He steals all the bad, unlimited, bad, sinful nature of the conditioned soul and give him to the highest attractive position to be his loyal servant. Externally maybe they have seen a lot of pastimes that he stole the clothes of the gopis. Finally, he stole the Srimati Radhika's heart and the color in order to come as Lord Chaitanya. All this thing, very sweet composition given by Billamangal Thakur. This is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says, Mahaprabhu was tasting, what you said is correct, only Paramahamsa can relish it. But if you would say in the class today that, oh, millions of people are offering the food, maybe Trivikram Prabhu will not ask you the question. Mm-hmm. How is that all these people are offering? Because it is little contradictory to my own nature, its similarity, that how can God have a, oh, immediately catch, how can God? So in order to trap the soul, it is also says that Bikriditam Brajavadu Viridam Cha Vishnu, all this Leela has to be narrated. That's why in India till today, there's a big Hindi songs going on. Every Indian knows that about Krishna as a makhan thief.
Yeah. See, the point is that all the great Vaishnavas, great poets, they recognize this sweetness of Krishna. And how can you, it's like in the past time, in the Bhagavatam, when Brahma goes to Indra. Indra has taken the body of a pig. I mean, imagine Indra. We think that being the president of the United States is a big deal, right? But being Indra is being the president of the whole universe. Great opulence. But yet, this Indra was born in the body of a pig. The very same guy who was enjoying all this great opulence of the universe, born in the body of a pig, completely conditioned by the loss of nature of the body of a pig, enjoying the pig life. And Lord Brahma is going down, you gotta get out of here. Come back, you know. Go back to heaven. And what the Indra say, oh, I'm enjoying life here. Leave me alone. So it's kind of, it's kind of funny actually, but that's how we are here. But the pure devotees, the Mangala Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, all these great acharyas, they have that power of saying, hey, this is what really it's all about. You know, forget about your rotting in this material world. Prabhupada used to use that expression. Why do we want to rot in this world, in these bodies? These bodies are so fragile. The only purpose of this body, of the human body, is really to understand Krishna. That's it. There's nothing else in these bodies. There's nothing else. We can enjoy for a few years, and after enjoying for a few years, all kinds of diseases come to this body. But if you don't have diseases to bother you, then you have a host of other people bothering you. So, why do we want to rot here? It's kind of, that's probably so right when he said only fools and rascals don't want to go to Krishna. And Krishna himself says it in the Bhagavad Gita, mudhas, fools. We had to be fools to be able to start munching on mud like pigs do, rather than eating ambrosia in the heavenly planets, let alone prasad in the transcendental world. So these discussions that we're having every day, actually you're unfortunate to be able to sit down here and listen to these things. Listen from Prabhupada, listen from all the other devotees. Not many people have this opportunity.
Where is the chance Krishna has that he is not God? Because he's stealing, lying, so he's covering. That's the only way he can do it, so nobody ever can think.
Right.
By the way, stealing tastes better, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur said. That's why Krishna said. He's not interested of taking 9 lakhs cows butter that his mother makes, but stealing tastes better, so he does that.
Excellent. Yeah. Any question from the lady side? Here. Sudevi, right?
I was thinking just to relate it back to us.
Yes.
The class, which was very nice. Thank you. So for us, it's our material disease that we think we want to enjoy like Krishna, like we are the false enjoyer. So I think it's important to have the right dovetail program where we have austerity and sacrifice to, you know, get rid of our material disease and at the same time not negate our propensities. So it's a really fine balance and very individual and unique for each person.
Absolutely. Transcendentalists have a tendency to go overboard. Like even us, I mean, in the early days of this movement, we were in the trip of negating everything. And so in the end, when our bodies were growing and our psychology was growing, when we hit late 20s, early 30s, many people collapsed. Because we were negating our own, like you were saying, our position. The only way, and this is following the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami, the only way we can deal with the things in our own lives, individually, is to dovetail these feelings in the service of the Lord. Like for example, we have the idea of austerity, we have the idea of renouncing the world, and we think, not only the devotees, but even the secular people in the world, they think like if you are a renounced person, you must be very spiritual. But yet, here we are encountering stories in the Bhagavatam in which there is so much enjoyment. So how could it be? How could, like you were saying, where's the balance? So the balance is that in Krishna consciousness we have a process that is called Varnashram Dharma. So devotees, when they are young, they enter brahmacharya life and they have to deal with their own existence in that level. When they mature, they enter into grihastha life and they have to deal with existence at that level. And when that is over, they enter into retirement life and then into renounced life. So the Varnashram Dharma, which is created by God himself, is to accommodate what you're talking about. Very few people will jump from, you know, being brahmacharis in the early teens to being paramahamsas right away. Most of us won't. And so because most of us won't, we have to have something palpable, concrete, to deal with the things. And that is called Varnashram Dharma.
But even in a more individual level, just knowing, you know, what your psychology is and like your combination of the modes that you have, and, you know, like even knowing that, which is...
I mean, you get that from personal relationship with your spiritual master, I would think. Yes. Or at least that's what I have. I feel like there's not enough dialogue about that, yes, personally. And
what happened is this. Krishna consciousness is highly, highly introspective. If a person who's practicing Krishna consciousness is non-introspective, he won't succeed. Life itself requires introspection. Just to live in this world requires introspection. Let alone to actually surpass the material existence and enter into the transcendental existence, does 1,000 times more level of introspection. If a person is non-introspective, he won't succeed, even in life. So what do we do? Like you were saying, individually, okay, so you have to look at yourself. I myself, I can humbly offer this advice, I developed this idea that at the end of the day, I wanted to know, what have I done for Krishna today? At the end of the day, I want to see how much have I contributed to Prabhupada's mission today. What have I done? What, even if it is 5 minutes. But at the end of the day, I wanted, after a busy day, you know, having to do all the things that we do in the secular world, okay, what have we done for God today? And that keeps you in the mood of introspective mood. And then in the end, it's not just at the end of the day. After a few years of doing this, this becomes constant. And then you can automatically balance both your secular life, your senses, your body, your own situation with Krishna's devotional service. The idea is that Krishna is not far away, for the devotees especially. Krishna resides within our hearts. So if we actually take seriously that reality that Krishna is in our hearts, how can we negate him at any moment? How can you say that you're alone? You know what I mean? And in terms of not dialoguing about those things, you have to find the proper association. Devotees, we have to associate with similar-minded devotees. And you reveal your mind, and the other devotee helps you by revealing their minds too. In fact, that's what we are doing here. Bhagavatam class, Bhagavad Gita class, all these classes are just, we share what we understand about God, and we all benefit. Every time this devotee sits here and speaks about Krishna, it's not actually just the devotee speaking, it's actually Krishna speaking. Because that's in the way Krishna reveals himself. Krishna only is the one who reveals himself. Nobody else has the power to reveal God. Krishna and the pure devotees do. And so, most of us who don't have access to a pure devotee 24/7, we only got each other. So this is why it's imperative that we keep this society alive. Why some devotees have such a keen interest in keeping ISKCON alive? Precisely for that you're talking about. Because otherwise, where is the forum by which we can express ourselves, by which we can grow spiritually, by which we can attain Krishna, if it is not in the society of devotees? So yeah, you can find a person who is suitable in mind, and you reveal your mind, and you're fine. You know, we all have grown in ISKCON like that. If you look back in time, the day you joined ISKCON, you did not know anything about Krishna. Then you start counting all the people who help you. I mean, I can tell you some of the devotees that help me in my own Krishna consciousness, and that's the association you seek. I mean, granted, sometimes you find people who will try to put you down in your own Krishna conscious spiritual life. So you avoid those. You know, because nobody's perfect, right? So don't think that because we're wearing a dhoti or somebody's wearing a beautiful sari, that's automatically a devotee. No, you have to screen your association, isn't it? Any other comments or questions from the ladies? Okay. Ladies? No more? Can we take the last one here?
My final comment is we were talking about Krishna consciousness and how it remedies the soul. You know, we're talking about authorized delineation of Krishna consciousness by Guru Parampara, Prabhupada's instructions. Prabhupada often quoted that to take medicine, not like a symbol, the symptoms of the bottle, like the bottle, how you take the medicine prescribed, just as his prescription deals with the symptom of the soul, bhakti, love for Krishna.
Well, coming back to the point of Sudevi here, actually, not only we who are engaged in devotional service, who are involved in this ISKCON mission, not only we have to become proper association to others, but we also have to seek the proper association. It's based on sincerity. No insincere person can remain in ISKCON for long. Because here we have to put all our cards on the table, so to speak. We cannot hide anything. How can you hide from Krishna? Krishna has been sitting in your heart since time immemorial. How can you hide from Krishna? How can we do that? Only in illusion, in that loop of illusion, we think that we are hiding from God. So if we come with the proper attitude of helping others and getting help from others, that is the spiritual world. It's like in this pastimes, you know, all these devotees, they are arranging themselves. Yoga Maya is arranging them. Yoga Maya is giving them the beautiful bodies that they have. You know, everybody in Vaikuntha, they're so beautiful. Everyone in Goloka Vrindavan is even probably more beautiful. Imagine that in the concept of beauty. I mean, Prabhupada explains that just the beauty of this insignificant universe is so relative. Prabhupada said, if you could pick up the most beautiful woman on earth, she would look like a frog in comparison to the average woman in the heavens. So it looks like a frog. You know, Miss Universe is like a frog jumping. But imagine the beauty of the people of Vaikuntha, who are more, infinitely more beautiful than Indra's Apsaras. And imagine the beauty of people devotees residing in Goloka Vrindavan. And imagine the beauty of Krishna, who is the source of all these beauties. So if that requires a great power of introspection. And the more you engage in that, the more you become attached to the process of Krishna consciousness. And the more you want to give Krishna to others. You found this. It's like Rupa Goswami said, when you have a jewel, such a valuable jewel, you want to give it. If you're a magnanimous person. But the more you give this jewel, the more jewels you get. Anyway, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.